And now, here's Jack Patty.
Good morning. Welcome into the 9 to 10 show for Friday. It is a Forensic Friday, and that means Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson is with us on American DA Live. Good morning, Ray.
Good morning, Jack.
Brought to you by Landscaper's Corner at 1305 Old Frankfort Pike. This spring, when it's time for grass seed, Landscaper's Corner has Triple Crown Elite available in 5, 25, and 50-pound bags, 225-9433. Our question of the day, which we always like to ask Ray at the beginning of the program, brought to you by United Structural Systems, your foundation repair and waterproofing experts, ifixfoundations.com, 859-254-7700. And the question is, does the crash of the Germanwings flight in France make you nervous about flying? Does it bother you?
No.
It doesn't me either. Yeah.
I don't fly enough.
But I don't either. Yeah.
By the same token, we got a lot of over-the-top rules and regulations that govern a lot of things in the United States, and one of which is the pilots and
airline
the
industry
time and that sort of thing that they can fly.
Yesterday's question was, Senator Ted Cruz was born in Canada. Does that hurt his chances of becoming president?
I'd say it does.
Do you?
I don't know. You know, for example, Obama, that's got all of the birther kind of issues still percolating out there, but his mother was an American, so that, you know, he gets citizenship that way.
Well, our listeners, 58% said no, that not going to hurt his chances as long as he meets the constitutional requirements. Doesn't matter where he was born. And 42% said yes. What's the status of his citizenship, and how can we be sure? Like you just said, where a lot of folks still feel unsure about President Obama's citizenship. All right, we started this last week with the intention of doing this as a one-show topic, but very quickly, because of the complexity of the case, realized that if we can get through just the case itself before we even got to the courthouse steps, we'd be lucky. And we did pretty well get up to the point where it was time for the trial. Fran Root, who's been on this program many times, a retired detective, with us last week and back this. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good to be back.
You were the lead detective in the worst case of a mass murder in the history of Lexington. Ray, you prosecuted the case. And should we kind of, what they call in the broadcast business, reset?
Yeah.
For those who were not with us last week, either one of you or both of you, tell us the story in less than 5 minutes.
Well, let me start off real quick. I got the call from Fran. Ray, we got a body. We've discovered a body out in the parking lot off in front of Godfather's Pizza at that time, in front off of Mount Tabor. And so I went out, and sure enough, there was a scuff mark where a body had been rubbed probably 100 feet, maybe 50, 100 feet on the parking lot. And after I observed the scene, went home. Before I could get back to bed, got another call, got another body. And then while we're at that second scene, Fran gets the call from somebody that they got a car on fire. It turned out there were three more bodies. And the process of investigating that was handled by the police department under the supervision of then head of the robbery homicide unit, Fran Root.
Is it routine for either you or a member of your staff to go to murders?
We try to.
Yeah,
we try to.
Okay.
It's there's no substitute for going to the scene and seeing it. You can videotape it, you can see pictures, but going to the scene, there's just you get a understanding of what kind of went on.
Are you guys on a round robin for that assignment? Are you
no,
on call?
I get the call, and I typically will go.
You will go, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
So, Fran, walk us through a little bit of the how did we end up with these LaFonda Faye Foster and Tina Hickey Powell? How did we find out that those are the two that were involved in this?
Well, in some cases, it was backtracking, but they were actually arrested a couple minutes before the dispatch called to the car on fire on Squires Road. So we already had them in custody, and because of the blood on them and other things, we knew that they would be a suspect. So then we worked it backwards from there. After we finished protecting our scenes and gathering the evidence, then it's just a matter of retracing their steps.
Once you know their identity, do you immediately check and see if they've got any history with any kind of prior convictions?
Well, we were already pretty familiar with both of these defendants.
You were?
Yes.
Okay.
They were regular customers.
Okay.
Frequent flyers, we like to call them.
Were they, had they done anything serious? I know they were prostitutes, right?
No, not yet.
Yeah, okay.
Well, now, wait a minute. You know, Faye Foster got married, and on her honeymoon, shot her husband.
Oh!
Yeah, in the arm.
I did not know that.
Yeah, now, how would, that sounds to me like a pretty bad grade for this guy.
Really? I don't think I ever heard that.
Yeah, well, she's a pretty violent person. The interesting thing, because we really didn't finish the investigation last week, but they were transported to the detention center that was located behind Central Christian Church at that time.
Yes.
And one of the things, one of their defenses was, is that they, at least Faye Foster, was that she was so drunk she didn't know what she was doing, the old Melbourne Mills defense. And thank goodness, the detention center, Ray Sabatini was the director at that time, or the jailer, I guess. They videotaped the intake section where Faye Foster was.
Why was that important?
Well, because when you can see the video of her standing there communicating with the person at the intake desk, then she wasn't stumbling, fumbling, drunk, as she said she was, and the jury got a chance to see that video. And she got thrown in a cell after she was booked with another woman, and I cannot remember her name, but Faye said, "Give me your pants." To the other woman, and she forced her to give her sweatpants, because Faye had all of this blood and all of that sort of stuff all over, and she was busy trying to wash her shoes in the toilet.
Did anybody witness that besides the other woman?
No. I mean, and so that other woman becomes a witness who's also charged with the crime. So, you know, we don't pick the witnesses.
Right.
If we did, Mother Teresa would make a lot of appearances. But
this other woman didn't have anything to do with this crime.
No,
she just happened to be there.
Okay. But she, you know, my guess would be if I saw somebody that Faye Foster's size and temperament, and
she would, said, "Give you my, you'd be pants, taking them off, wouldn't
she's
you?"
She's got them.
Yeah,
she can have them.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So, any rate, that they were arrested and so forth, and then Fran and his group, the robbery homicide unit, get real busy putting together all of the pieces on this thing. And so, Fran, tell me about the injuries of the victims in this case, because there were a number of different types of injuries, and how those injuries were caused becomes important evidence in the trial.
Yes, each of the five have been shot numerous times, that each been stabbed numerous times, and had been run over by a car. And then in addition to that, at the Squires Road scene, two of them were burned pretty badly from the fire where the girl set fire to the car.
Three women, two men.
Yeah, two women, three men.
Three men, okay.
Right. Yes. The interesting thing that we saw right off the bat were the knife wounds. The knife wounds were made in tandem. There was two blades on this knife that would go in exactly the same way each time, and turned out that they had a rather unique type of buck folding hunter type knife that had two blades that could be folded out from the same end of the knife. And so in their efforts to kill these people, they thought it was better to have the two blades out instead of the one. And so we had these identical patterns to go with.
So they had two blades at once. They were stabbing them twice at a time.
Right.
Really?
Right. Yes.
Well, and you know, that doesn't sound particularly important, until you got a, you've got to prove the cause of death, because there were any numbers of different injuries that have, could have caused the death. Now, unfortunately, we end up getting the knife.
Yes.
And
where'd you find it?
Well,
in Tina's pocket.
Right. Now that's important.
Wow.
Because we gotta attach both defendants to the injuries and ultimate death of all five individuals. Now, this was pre-DNA evidence
sure.
days.
Yeah.
And we only and what we had to deal with in this case was serology, blood types, and that sort of thing. And it was interesting.
We kept two chemists busy for 6 weeks
I bet.
On that case.
We're taking a break. If you have a question or comment, 253-5959. Touch star 590 from AT&T, toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590. 23 minutes after 9 o'clock. Boy, I tell you, this case is years and years old, but it never ceases to be interesting. And also, there seems like there's always something new that comes out I didn't know before. You know, this is great, right?
Well, one of the we talked about the knife that has two blades that come out on the same end. And that evidence was taken from the pocket of Tina Hickey Powell. And it's important because it was taken to the crime lab, the Kentucky State Police Crime Lab, and the serologists there examined it for blood. And it's significant that the blood of each of the victim was found on that knife. And that now, how do they do that without DNA? Well, they do it by first they do blood types. We got to get the blood type of every victim in the case. That's number one. But sometimes it's A, B, or O, or A, whatever the various blood types are. But they also have enzymes in each of those types, and they had to go so far as to examine the enzymes. This, like I said, this is pre-DNA stuff, and we thought we were pretty sophisticated when this happened, because we had a big chart to show that this knife was used on each of the people, as well as the clothes. Now, you all took clothes from both of these defendants and had them examined, and what did you find from that, Fran?
We found blood from each of the victims. One of the other problems was is two of our victims had exactly the same blood type, even out to 10 antigens that they had tested them on. So that was just another complication for an already complicated case.
Yeah. Well, today it takes two to two and a half years, Jack, to get a murder case to trial.
What'd you say, it was 7 months?
7 months from the time of these crimes until the trial. And the trial was, we'll get into that, but the trial lasted 6 weeks, which is a long trial for Lexington.
That had been in California, it had been 6 months.
6 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is Jim. Good morning, Jim.
Yeah, I just wanted to know, did they ever do an investigation on other crimes that they might have committed before this murder took place?
Well,
does that make sense? I mean, I'm just, you know, if you look you backwards mean, did she, before did, this main thing happened.
Did they have a criminal record? Is that your question?
Yeah, and possible maybe other murders or something that might have happened before. You know, maybe they did something bad before that happened. Did anybody ever check into that? Is there any connection?
I have no doubt that if there was any possibility that they were involved in another violent crime like this, that the police department would have investigated, Fran.
There were very few open homicides at that time, so and certainly nothing matching up.
So the odds are good they didn't.
This M.O.
Yeah. We got to thank you very much, Jim. We've got a regular listener, Robert, that listens to us up in Wisconsin
right.
every day on line. He's from Kentucky, and he said loves this case, is really interested in it, but he said Ray made reference to the Melbourne Mills defense, and he wondered what you meant by that. Can you tell us real quickly?
Sure. Melbourne Mills, William Galyon, and Shirley Cunningham were all three charged with stealing millions of dollars from clients in what we call the FinFin case some years ago, and they all went to trial. Cunningham and Galyon were found guilty and are presently residing in a federal penitentiary. Melbourne Mills' defense was, I was too drunk to know what I was doing.
And they bought it.
And the jury bought it. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So that's, there you go.
We got about 2 minutes till the break.
We're getting ready to go to trial on this thing, and I can't remember how many witnesses we had, Fran.
There was 142.
Gee!
Now, we didn't call all those, but there was 142 on the witness list.
Yeah, and so...
That's got to be some kind of record, isn't
well,
it?
Well, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's you have to prove every element against two witnesses and five victims.
Now, who decided they would be tried together?
Well, the judge did. The
okay.
Judge Keller was the judge in this case.
Technically, what happened there for that to happen? What?
Well, the sometimes people will file a motion for separate trials. And in this instance, I can't remember whether they did that or not, but they were tried together because basically for judicial economy.
Yeah.
Try them together. It's the same facts. They were together the whole time. They both participated in the same thing. So let's keep them together and try them together.
Okay. This is Andy. I think you're going to ask about motive. That came up last week, too. Andy?
That's all I wanted to ask was there something that motivated this? Thanks.
Okay. Fran?
Other than being mean women, we really don't know. Probably somewhat of a robbery. They did try to get checks cashed by one of the victims.
I think they got ticked off at Carlos's wife, who said, get him out of here, and she called the police, and I think they got mad at her. So they wadded them all up in the car and took them off, and it was just like a weekend with Bernie after that.
They were drunk at the time.
Well, they were under the influence.
And what else were they doing? Did you know?
No, they were doing...
cocaine, I believe.
Yeah. Cocaine.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I've learned on this program, Ray, that you in trial, you do not have to prove motive. But I've learned also that jurors like one.
Sure, they want to know why.
Yeah.
But bottom line is it's not necessary. What we have to prove is that they did it.
Right. Taking a break. 253-5959. Touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere. 1-877-777-0590 or email jackpatty@wblkam.com. Yeah, it's 9:38, 22 minutes before 10. News Talk 590 WVLK. Commonwealth Attorney Ray Larson with us. And retired Lexington Police Detective Fran Root. When did you retire, Fran?
2000.
How you like retirement?
Well, I enjoy it, but I work full time. I simply changed jobs.
So you didn't retire. You just changed jobs. What do you do now?
I run a part of the training operation over in Richmond for the police academy.
Oh, very good.
Which, by the way, I have just read this heroin legislation that our legislature...
what do you think about that?
Well, let's talk about it sometime because okay. I can get myself worked right into a frenzy.
You don't like it?
Some of it is fine. You know, it's destined not to work.
Okay. Let's do a show on it.
Okay. Any rate, when we get ready to go to trial, I can remember getting ready on this case in our conference room because I had a big roll of butcher paper. And we went all the way around the room on the wall. This is how we're going to do it. And we have events, and who are the...
And that you call room, that timeline, right?
Yes.
See?
And it was 20 feet on each side of the room. And the whole room was covered.
This is one of the first times that Ray called me in to start trial prep.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Francis, why don't we come in a little bit early on Monday? And I said, okay, well, I'll be there about 7. And he said, no, I was thinking about 4.
So really?
So you went in at
4 o'clock in the morning. Okay.
Yeah, and we went. I lost 14 pounds in this trial that lasted 6 weeks. Now, Faye Foster was represented by a guy named Kevin McNally and Russ Baldoni. Russ Baldoni still practices in Lexington. I don't know where Kevin McNally is, but he was sort of perceived as a hot shot death penalty defense lawyer, and those two represented Faye Foster. Gene Luter, who was with the local Lexington Public Defender's Office, only called him legal aid at that time, represented Tina Powell.
Where did LaFonda Faye get her money to have two hot shot attorneys?
Well, they were, I don't know, but that's something that's very interesting is that convicted and sentenced to death, she became sort of the poster girl for the anti-death penalty zealots out there, and they would send money to her prison or jail account.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Sabatini was amazed because, Faye Foster family was... seemed to be making money on this deal.
Well, the reason I asked about where'd she get her money, I was wondering if, and I've heard this happening lots, you got a high-profile case, these defense lawyers will do it for free, won't they, for the publicity a lot of times?
I don't know.
You don't know?
That I don't.
Is that information that you wouldn't be allowed to know, or you just don't care?
I don't care.
Okay.
So what happens is, I was asked sometime later after this trial, who did I think was the best attorney at defending death penalty cases? And I think everybody was expecting me to say somebody like this McNally fella who would wander around the country defending these cases. And I said, Gene Luter, local guy. And they said, well, why do you say Gene Luter? And I said, let me explain something to you. The people that are high-profile defense lawyers on these things spend all of their time fighting against the death penalty law and not quite so much time on defending their clients.
Hmm.
Gene Luter says, I'm going to defend my client where my client is, and that is on trial for death. And I represent my client. And he was... good at it, and in this case, it was fascinating to watch what happened because we were in the old courthouse, and there on the front row was Faye Foster, Kevin McNally, and Russ Baldoni right up there in the front, and in the back doing their best to hide was on a table they set up behind the Faye Foster table was Tina Powell and Gene Luter trying to stay out of the line of fire. And you know what Luter's opening statement was? We'll see you in the penalty phase. We did it, but we'll explain why we did it, and we'll see you in the penalty phase.
You're so he didn't put on any defense?
Not as to the guilt of her involvement.
Okay.
You see?
And he wasn't required to. Is that right?
He didn't have to. He didn't have to do anything.
Okay.
And it turned out to be super smart because in the process of us having to prove these homicides, we just, Fran and the 17 detectives that worked on this, as well as the other witnesses, came over there. And Faye Foster became sort of front and center. And she got most everybody's attention, you see, because back behind them is Gene Luter and Tina Powell just kind of...
keeping a low profile.
Yeah. And
I remember it was highly publicized and lots of media coverage. Did that help, hinder, or neither?
You know, when they first started wanting to put cameras and so forth in the in at trials and that sort of thing, courtrooms, everybody was all thinking, oh, this is going to be awful. This is going to be awful. And because people are going to be like they did in the O.J. Simpson case, they began playing to the cameras and that sort of thing. But you really don't notice. You know, when you're doing these cases, at least we don't even notice that they're there.
It was pre-court TV days, though. So was there were there cameras in the, yeah, in the courtroom?
Yeah. Now what they have, all of the courtrooms are equipped with sound detected video, meaning when you speak into a microphone that's located around various locations around the courtroom, the camera that's focused on that goes to that
automatically.
Yeah.
What did you have a press conference every day, or did you?
No, you didn't say anything
to the press mm-hmm. for the whole trial.
No.
Did you say anything to the media after
not
the trial?
Not much.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, Jack, the one we've had a man on this show who's probably the most highly thought of prosecutor in American history, and that is Bob Horan from Alexandria, Virginia, and he's the one that the Washington D.C. snipers,
he
prosecuted that. He has a great line, and he's a friend of mine. He said, "Here's the line." He says, "If you want to know about the procedures, criminal procedure, court procedures, I'll talk to you all day. If you want to know about the facts, come to the trial."
Taking a break. 253-5959, touch star 590 from AT&T. Toll free from anywhere, 1-877-777-0590, or email jackpatty@wvlkam.com. We're not going to do it, but we could probably do another hour on the show. A listener wanted to know how old the women were when these crimes were committed. Do you remember by any chance, either one of you?
21 and 22 and 27.
22 and 27.
Tina was older.
This is Roy. Good morning, Roy.
Yeah, Jack, I was wondering if any of them have seen the movie 100 Proof.
I certainly did. Jim Varney was in it for one scene.
It was based on that, wasn't it?
Yes. Did you see 100 Proof?
Yes, I did.
What'd you think?
Well, the funny thing was, is I was sitting next to LaFonda Faye's father. And he was so proud that Jim Varney was chosen to play his part. So he felt like he was a celebrity.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. Jim Varney was the high spot in the movie, obviously.
Well, I think they only paid him $50 or something.
Yeah, and he was here for an hour or something, but he made the movie. Yeah, thank you, Roy. I'm glad you brought that up. I had forgotten about that. Ray, we've got 4 minutes to wrap this up.
Well, the trial lasted 6 weeks, longest trial I've ever been involved in. And they found both of them guilty of intentionally causing the death of five people. And it's a multiple murder, which is an aggravating circumstance in Kentucky, which allows the jury to consider the death penalty as one of several penalties. They came back and they had found both of them guilty, and then in fixing the penalty, they sentenced Faye Foster to death. She received a death sentence, and Tina received a sentence of life without parole for 25 years, meaning she had to serve at least 25 years before she was
eligible
to even talk to the parole board. Now, that the death sentence was reversed because the Supreme Court thought that both women should have had a separate jury in the penalty phase.
Not in the regular trial,
no,
but the penalty
phase. The penalty phase. And, you know, Judge Keller was a good judge. Matter of fact, he was a great judge.
Yeah.
And to this day, I think that was a lousy decision. But it's their job, and they made the decision. And it came time to that occurred about 5 years after the trial, and or after the homicides. And it came time to get ready to retry the case. And when you try to locate witnesses, and as Fran said, we had 142 people that were potential witnesses, and some of the critical witnesses had died, and or were unavailable, we couldn't find them. And of course, we could have had a transcript read of their testimony because they were unavailable. But you know, it's not the same when you try to retry a case and you have to have somebody read a transcript as opposed to having the real witness there. And we made the decision that with as many witnesses as we couldn't find or could or were, had died since then, Faye Foster was sentenced to life without parole, period, meaning she'll die in prison. Tina Powell is, of course, she is continues her life without parole for 25 years, and she comes up, she's been up for parole, and she's going to come up again in, I think, 2021.
You'll be there, right?
Well, I intend to be there. I mean, I'm, yeah, if I'm still around.
Will they, in your opinion, get out at some point?
I don't think Faye Foster ever will, because her sentence is life without parole.
Oh, that's right. That's mm-hmm. right. But the other, do you think she'll get out?
I don't know. I mean, it's even the parole board recognizes that killing five people is pretty heavy-duty crime.
Fran, thank you, sir.
Yes, good to be here.
Nice to see you again. Thank you, Ray. See you next week.
Okay.
Update from the Information Center is coming up next. Have a great weekend.